From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, my brother, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, back here. Another episode, fantastic episode of Bob After Dark as I put down my shield there. Here we are. Yes, here we are live, Bob. It's hard to believe we're back here live again.
Yes, how have you been, Count Panic? And I'm going to have you talk to me for a couple minutes because I got to share this to the right channels.
Yeah, make sure you share it to all the right channels.
Yeah, so I'm going to let you talk for a minute.
Because I know we're also doing a special Facebook Live tonight as well. Normally podcast, normally radio, normally Jet TV, but a special Facebook edition because of the guests we have here today. We wanted to feature them front and center on all the platforms here tonight. But yeah, we're in for another action-packed show, kind of a part two of a two-part series we're featuring here, and I'm sure we're going to get all into it. But Bob, I can't complain. I had a great weekend. The Count likes to go out and relax from time to time, and that's exactly what I did there, Bob. So all in all, it was fantastic weekend on my end. How about yours? How was your weekend?
Oh, I got to play some disc golf.
Big into disc golf.
That
now,
seems to be the thing. I had a couple people reach out to me on fan mail and be like, Bob, let me know when you're making it through to the convention scene in my town. We'll have you come out and play some disc golf with us.
There you go.
So that's been the thing. Yeah. What else did I do? I had a fun little gathering on Saturday. Is Sunday. I got to see the new Indiana Jones movie.
Did you see it?
Yeah, me and Queen of the Night, we went and saw Indiana Jones, The Dial of Destiny.
Oh, okay. Well, Harrison Ford's been, he's 80 now.
Yes.
Yeah. But, he's still making action films out there. Well, I'm glad you got to see the movies.
You're going
to
ask me what I thought of it, I hope.
Well, what did you think of it?
I'm not saying it was bad, but I will say that there are some things in the world that don't need to be made.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And this was one of them?
Yes. Wow. How do I say this? It wasn't a bad movie by any means. It was good. I enjoyed it. It didn't wrap up, I don't think, on a correct way.
Okay.
I think it should have wrapped up nicely where it was left a little bit more ambiguous. I won't say any more than that. I would say if you were a fan of the franchise, it definitely screams Indiana Jones. So me, I'm a big fan of the movie franchise, so I enjoyed it enough. And now here we are.
Here we are, yes.
If this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly podcast where we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and of course, Count Panic's favorite Harrison Ford film.
Oh, man. How about Air Force One? Get off my plane.
Get off my plane.
That's a classic one, right? That's got to rank up pretty high there. I'll put that at number one for now, Bob. I'll put that at number one. Because it's easy to say Indiana Jones or Star Wars, but we'll go with Air Force One.
That's a good answer.
Good answer. Put it on the board.
Now we have a very special part two tonight.
We do.
Yes.
Okay.
I was waiting for you to take over there.
I kind of said that, but yes, we do a special two part episode, Bob.
Yeah. Who's with us tonight?
Oh man, you made me screw this up royally last time, Bob. I could get names down, but
okay. So let's get it this time.
I got the JR part right there.
Yes.
Yes. But I want to make sure I say this in the way I'm supposed to be saying this too, because the way I would say it traditionally is Barajas, but it could be Barajas as well.
I'll give you Barajas.
What did I say last time?
I think you were. Barriches?
Did I say
Barriches?
That?
Barriches.
I know. I'm going by what I got here. And of course, thank you for being here once again, JR. And alongside him, from Veterans Views, the award-winning Veterans Views, Pat O'Donnell here. So
Pat, welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
He's been around.
Good to be back.
He's been around a lot lately on these airwaves, the morning shows, night shows, everywhere.
So, actually, let's start before we get to the whole thing. Let's get a quick reminder of who you are. Let's start with JR this time. Who are you? Background a little bit. Tell me about your military background. That's why we're here tonight. And just tell me one fun fact about yourself that maybe the world doesn't know.
Fun fact. Good Lord, Bob. That's a lot to take in. All right, here we go. Hello out there, Bob After Dark peoples. My name is John R. Barajas Jr. That's right. That's how you say it. You want to try it? Want to try
Barajas,
it with me?
Barajas. There.
Barajas.
Yes.
Try it.
Barajas.
All right, there you go.
I kind of gave it a little flavor there.
Yeah, too. I love it. Yeah. I love it. And I like spicy stuff.
A little flavor.
I was a Navy sailor for 11 years. I visited 42 different countries in my tenure. I made it to the rank of E5.
Keep talking.
I would like to keep talking right now.
No, you're good. Just keep going.
I had various jobs in the Navy, but my favorite was a aviation machinist mate, which I was a mechanic. Had fun doing that. Worked on 4 different aircraft. I was honorably discharged in 2013. And now I do Bob After Dark when he asks me.
Yes, your check's in the mail.
And one fun fact about me.
Yeah, you just took over presidency of a certain organization.
I was going to try something else, but yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I recently became the president of the Windy City Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And
that's
you may now refer to me as El Presidente.
El Presidente. Yes.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Now, for our fans at home for WJOB, this man needs no introduction. He's been on the airwaves half my lifespan. Runs probably the most important veteran-ran radio talk shows in the country. Man whose accolades, if he sat here and recited everything he was involved with in his entire background, my entire show would become the Pat Show.
We have time for that.
We don't. But, ladies and gentlemen, our second guest of the evening, and who are you?
Pat O'Donnell, sir.
Hello, Pat.
173rd Airborne Brigade in Vietnam, and I'm proud to say thank you to all the veterans out there, and keep an eye out because there's a lot of things happening, supernatural and scientifically, that might stir a lot of controversy in the future, especially some of the things that are happening in the world of science that pertains to spirits, ghosts, and abnormalities that happen. And we'll have more about that later on in the show.
All right, Pat, a fun fact about yourself that maybe not everybody knows.
A fun fact?
A fun fact about yourself.
Well, a lot of people don't know that I used to be a professional fighter.
Oh, no kidding, like a boxer.
Kickboxer.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty
good. I used to own a chain.
Yeah, I'm glad you got between us there, JR.
Well, I'm just saying, Pat's like the Bob Costas of Hammond over here.
Exactly. He knows that he's got everything.
He's got everything, man. He's got data for days.
So, folks, we're live here back on the Facebook universe because we're doing a salute to the troops this month. And we're talking about veteran ghost stories, things that might have happened in the military to you guys that you've experienced, things that you've heard, and then, you know, along the et cetera. Pat, of course, just came out full swinging last time he was here and then proceeded to tell us the entire paranormal backstory of the region, which... A lot of people have wrote in about the Men in Black encounter, and they thought that was absolutely fantastic. So we're very, very excited to be on the rebuttal from that. And it's really hard to follow a really good episode, and I've had a lot of positive feedback. So it's cool to be on this here then for the second part. So
Thank you.
He came prepared with notes, everybody. Now
I don't have a laptop.
No.
I'm old school.
That's fine. You know, I got to point out my... My tenure of co-hosts on the show, Steve never comes with notes. So, and JR just...
Well, see, when you get over 75, you got to write notes and things down.
See, what people don't know is all my notes are on the bottle right now. I'm just reading off of it.
Listen, I must have the mind of the 75-year-old because I need my notes. So, folks, without further ado, welcome to, once again, Bob After Dark. Normally, we split up the show into 2 segments, but this week, all bets are off. We're just going to be talking a lot about the United States military and the ghost stories attached. So, JR, in the last time, we didn't get a chance to tell your other story because Pat just came in with the file cabinet knowledge, which was absolutely brilliant, and you're like... I didn't get to tell my second part.
I did not say
so
it
that's
like that.
Why, no, it was it, exactly. He's saying it. He told me the exact same way. He's like, well, I didn't get to tell my second story. And I'm like, would you like to come back on the show? Yeah, I'd like to come back on the show, please.
You know, Bob, because it's your show, I'm going to let you tell it like it is.
Mm. All right, so JR had a really cool story for us the last time we talked about the
USS Arizona.
USS Arizona, and now decommissioned former active ship, yes? Well,
yeah, the USS Arizona is the one that sunk. It's the good Lord, I'm blanking.
Oh, great job, everybody.
The USS Missouri,
yes,
is the one that's decommissioned. That's the battleship.
Yes, and you had a ghostly encounter on there. Wrap it up in a really tight bow if you had to just for the folk that might be tuning in now that missed last time.
Basically, I was a non-believer, and I had an experience that made me think twice when I would have to say an apparition of a former sailor had touched me on my shoulder, and that gave me a spook. And now I don't know what to believe anymore, but I will say this, it was real.
So you have a story specifically about a lighthouse.
Yes, yes. So again, 2005, I was stationed at Patuxent River, Maryland, my actual first squadron, working on P3s. And I do what sailors do, find girlfriends. And that's what I did. I found a girlfriend, and she was really interested in the supernatural and taking pictures, you know, orbs, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And I just brushed it off. I'm like, yeah, okay, let's go do it. You know, because I would do anything to, you know, make her happy. So she said, let's go to Point Lookout Lighthouse.
What is Point Lookout?
Now, Point Lookout, which I did my research on this, Point Lookout Lighthouse was a lighthouse used during the Civil War.
Okay.
Okay.
Where's it located?
It is, it's actually in Scotland, Maryland.
Okay.
All right, Scotland, Maryland, but it's at the very tip of Maryland. It's actually a peninsula part. If you look it up on Google Maps, you know, you'll see, like, hey, there it is. So it was far enough away from the Civil War, but close enough to be in the action. And they made the lighthouse that was there, the mansion that was next to it, was used as a makeshift hospital. Okay, so Union soldiers were there treated, and Confederate soldiers who were caught were also treated, but not as well. So that's where we start to get the stories in the mansion and in the lighthouse. The stories go, they would start hearing voices of people past talking about, you know, time to amputate the leg, or he's shot, we need to amputate the arm, that kind of thing. And they were getting all kinds of reports on that. So after doing the research, I'm like, yeah, whatever. Let's go. Sure. So we get in the car and we start driving down to the most southern point of Maryland to go to this lighthouse. Now, we get there, and right off the bat, it is eerie because we went at night. It's about midnight. The park's already closed.
Oh.
So we snuck in.
Oh, of course, as one does.
As one does. So we sneak in. I lift the gate, and she drives on through. And, of course, she keeps driving, makes me walk all the way to the lighthouse. That was fun.
Yeah.
So we come across the lighthouse. Now, again, this is 2005. Cell phones barely had cameras. And if they did, I don't even know
what.
One megapixel, two if you were really lucky.
Yeah.
Okay. So she starts taking photos of the lighthouse. Uh-huh. Okay. So she's taking photos. She's like, oh, look at this orb. Oh, look at this orb. And again, I am just whatever.
Sure.
You know, whatever. Now, we start looking around. We're going in the lighthouse. I had no idea we were actually going to go into the lighthouse. She's done this before.
Folks, let me preface real quick. Let me just
put absolutely. It in it. Absolutely.
I tell all my young ghoul scouts out there that are young paranormal investigators, you know, PSAs, spooky PSAs, don't be breaking and entering during your investigations. JR is just telling us the story.
Yes.
Don't be like JR. Always get permission before an investigation or make sure you're on public land. Continue.
Yes. All right. Well, apparently she had done this before and she knew exactly how to get into the lighthouse and into the mansion. So first stop is the lighthouse. Uh-huh. So we get into the lighthouse. There's four of us. It's myself, my girlfriend, her best friend, and her best friend's boyfriend. So we're all there. I honestly can't remember names, so don't ask me to.
So what was the names?
I can't.
You asked me. You told me to. Sorry. Go on.
Bob, Bobarina, and Bobo.
That's good enough.
That's good enough. Don't encourage him, Pat. Jeez.
All right, we're trying to get serious, though. It's a little spooky. Okay, so we go into the lighthouse.
Uh-huh.
And it is very spooky.
Right.
As it would be because it's not really kept. There's cobwebs. There's busted doors. There's all this. The stairs to the top. They're missing stairs. And I'm telling her, stop. You know, come back here. Come back. You know, this isn't safe. What are you doing? She's like, oh, I've done this before. So she starts climbing up and climbing up. As she's doing this, I'm worried about her. But then again, I get this weird chill in the back, in my back. I'm like, what was that? What's going on? I brush it off. Mm-hmm. So I finally convince her to come back down. And she's like, okay, let's go into the mansion.
Yes.
Okay, fine. Let's go into the mansion.
Let's go to the mansion.
So we go into the mansion. She sneaks in again. Now, again, this is a national park.
Yes.
And she snuck in to the mansion.
There's federal officers there.
There's no one there.
Well, no, I'm saying you.
Oh, yeah.
That's federal property.
That's federal property. But
did you look up your statute of limitations before you told the story, by the way?
Not even. No.
His name is J.R. Darajas. By the way.
Come at me, bro.
Darajas with a D. With a D.
Go on.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine. It's fine. So now here's where things get a little more spooky.
Sure.
So we all walk in, and she says, okay, everyone pick a spot and stand still. Okay. So we're all standing still. Mm-hmm. All you can hear is everyone breathing.
Yes.
Okay. And everyone, they're not moving really. And I have a pretty good eye on everyone because the light from the moon is shining through, and you know, it's pretty well lit, but it's still dark and eerie. Mm-hmm. Now we start hearing the floors up above creak. Yes.
Like somebody's walking.
Like not really somebody's walking. More like someone's like trying to lean over to hear. Or you know how you're in a house and you hear the. That's exactly what. And it wasn't just like a quick one. It was a long one.
Sure.
So now I'm in this mode where I'm like, I'm going to start praying that no one comes out of a closet and kills me.
Uh-huh.
So I am literally praying to myself. I am praying to God, and, you know, saying, Lord, please watch out for me and these idiots that decided to break into a mansion. And I am profusely praying in my head, and I'm repeating the same things over and over and over and over and over and over and over again until I hear someone say something really creepy.
And it was,
who are you? But they didn't say, oh, who are you? It was, who are you? Like a whisper. Mm. Now, I look over at the three other people there. And again, they weren't in front of me like this close, but the voice was right behind me. There was no one behind me.
Yes.
So now I'm really praying. And I'm telling them, okay, I think it's time to go. And she's telling me, shut up and don't move. I'm like, okay.
As if this was Jurassic Park and your ghost act like T-Rexes.
I guess. I have no idea.
Yeah.
So I didn't tell her that I heard someone speak. I thought I was just imagining things because now I'm spooking myself. So I tell her, can we please go? I ask her, can we please go? I really don't feel comfortable. Can we please go? And she is so strong-willed that she's saying, no, just a little bit longer. Then I hear a scream.
Oh.
It is her friend, okay? Mm-hmm. But now, mind you, if we're separated, so she's not near her boyfriend, she's not near my friend, she's over by herself, she screams a blood-curdling scream. She goes, who touched me? Who touched me? And she is now freaking out. So now my girlfriend grabs her, and we start bolting out of the mansion. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now we're outside, and I'm like, okay, come back to center, calm down. So my girlfriend hands me her phone. She says, hey, start taking pictures for me. I'm going to take care of my friend. Sure. So I'm just taking pictures.
One megapixel at a time. Yep.
Okay. 1 megapixel at a time. So I'm taking pictures, and then she starts looking at them after she calmed down her friend. And she's going through them, and she's like, oh, that's interesting. She's, oh, that's a cool orb. Then she stops, mm-hmm. and she sees something in the picture. And we can't zoom in these phones because these are flip phones.
Yeah.
You can't zoom in it. But she saw something. She saw something very distinct. So she's looking at it. She goes, honey, what does that look like to you? And she shows me the phone. I said, I don't know. What does it look like to you? She said, I don't know. So she shows it to the she goes, that looks like a face.
Oh.
It looked like a face through the window.
Spooky.
So we go home.
Yes.
And we put it on the computer, and we blow it up. And it looked like a face. I bet you she still has this photo because she would not shut up about it forever.
Yep.
She would always bring it up. I would never, ever, ever, ever want to go back to that place at that time at night to do it again because I was genuinely freaked out. I didn't believe in ghosts at that point. Not like I did, you know, Arizona, USS Arizona. I was more of, am I going to get possessed by a demon? You know, that kind of, the religious aspect of it.
Sure.
So, come to find out, again, doing the research, it was just, there were a lot of other people that report the same thing. But what they never got was the picture of the face. And what it is, it's this nurse that is stuck in the mansion. She wears a white shirt and a blue, not a gown, but what
scrubs.
Not a scrubs, but it's a dress. Not a dress, but it's like this.
The question I would ask is why are these ghosts stuck here?
Well, it depends on what theory you're going at, but I don't want to interrupt you. I'll answer that here in a moment.
This lady is one of the nurses that died in the mansion.
Sure.
But she is stuck there, and she is constantly her job was to take care of the wounded. So that's the voice that everyone reports hearing. We're going to have to amputate. Get me gauze.
Ooh.
You know, that kind of thing. Those are the phrases that they constantly hear. So my girlfriend at the time, she is, you know, she believes that that's who was in the window. She was looking through the window trying to see.
Is that who you think spoke to you? Or do you think that was something different?
I don't know. I don't know because it didn't sound like a man. It didn't sound like a woman.
Disembodied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could have been the voice of a dead soldier.
Other folk, did they say there's multiple entities hanging around there, or is it just typically the one?
Typically the one, because that's the one that everyone reports seeing a shadowy figure wearing a white blouse and blue dress at the
bottom. What's interesting about your story is that what you're telling me, what other people experience when they do investigations there, it's all residual hauntings where it's saying, you know, they're picking up on things in the past, like a time loop. Like, I'll get the gauze, there's a surgical process going on. And this is to credit Pat's question. You know, when we look at hauntings, what is a haunting? It's energy left behind. Sometimes that's a small amount of energy where you're going to have something kind of just trapped in a time loop, walks back and forth, 3 o'clock in the morning, as I've said countless times here on the show. It's a residual haunting. And then you have an intelligent haunting, which is enough energy left behind that, you know, you can interact with you. You can interact with it. Why do people stick around or trapped? Sometimes it's, at least in my experiences and my investigations, some things don't know that they're dead. Some things refuse to move on, unfinished business. Something so tragic happened that it happened in a quick way. And some just get, and I've heard this in, you know, EVPs and stuff over the years, things like, I don't know how to move on. I don't know what's next, or they're afraid of what's next. You know, is it oblivion? Is it heaven? Is it hell? Whatever it might be. You know, they're afraid of what's after that. And you sometimes have to gently give them a push.
Yeah.
And then other times, you know, they're here by choice. They come back and they're like, hey, I'm here. You know, example, my father. My father wasn't here. Then he came and visited. And then he's peaced out again, and he'll come back again. So, you know, it's stuff like that. So I hope that answers your question.
That answers my question. Are you finished with the story?
I absolutely am.
I wanted to hear what you guys got out of there, right? And
yes, everyone, obviously, I'm here. Well, she's happily
apron,
married.
By the way. She was wearing an apron.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Was it? I don't know.
Women
of the time weren't allowed to wear pants.
No, Queen of the Night chimed in and said, was it an apron?
Could have been.
Yeah.
But again, everyone reports that it's blue, almost like denim.
Yep.
But a white blouse.
Now, Pat has questions for you. I'm sorry.
Now, the scientists, and I'm going to play the devil's advocate.
No, that's fine. This is great.
And the scientists would say that, you know, the brain has a tough job. It's got information coming in. It's like when you look at a cloud and you see a face.
Matrixing.
Right.
Yep.
And I think it's called pareidolia, something like that.
Or matrixing, same thing. Yep.
And what you see right now isn't what actually out there in the world. So they can say that. But a lot of these scientists haven't been in haunted houses, and I have. For example, when you mishear the lyrics in a song, your brain filled in the meaning that wasn't there. It's like that writing that you can read, but it's the letters
jumbled
are messed up.
Yeah. Right.
And it's very similar to what happens when so-called ghost hunters capture sounds that they say are ghost speaking. They call this electronic voice phenomena, which you mentioned earlier, EVP. The recording is probably just random noise, is what a scientist would say. If you listen to it without knowing what was supposedly said, you probably won't hear words. But when you know what the words are supposed to be, you might now find that you can discern them easily. So that's what a scientist would say.
Yep.
Now, you got low-frequency sounds. You've got also, when you go in these old houses and everything, you might have mold in there, and the mold spores are floating in the air. And if you inhale them, you might have a tendency to start
hallucinating.
Yep.
So there's a whole variety of different things, and I wrote down some of the things that can happen.
You know, I love it.
Carbon monoxide, just breathing in a mold could lead us to see, hear, and feel things that aren't really there, but so can breathing too much carbon monoxide. That's why we got carbon monoxide detectors. So a lot of things can cause that, even the power suggests that we are more likely to believe in a paranormal experience if someone else who was there can back up our beliefs. So while we might be able to convince ourselves that we are somehow mistaken about what we see or hear, we tend to put more stock into someone else's eyewitness account. It also backs up our suspicions, so our belief in ghosts can be catching. But I know one thing. If you really want to know if there's a ghost running around, get a dog.
Yeah. Or a cat. Yep,
or a
100%.
Cat. Because I'll tell you what, a dog or a cat will tell you if there's a ghost around there.
They all have the 1,000-yard stare, or they'll refuse to go to a certain spot, 100%.
And, of course, I wrote something down in Dog Facts, and dogs can hear twice as many frequencies as humans. Mm. There are overwhelming evidence that dogs can hear, see, and smell things that we cannot. So the next time you see your pup acting oddly, it could be that he has, in fact, seen a ghost. Mm. You know. So, and the question arises, why are these things here, which you already kind of answered? It could be because they don't know they're dead, they are here because they haven't finished a purpose that they thought they would finish.
Yep.
on the earth. And you got full-bodied apparitions, shadow people, objects moving on their own, and even the bizarre gremlin-like hooded spirit captured by ghost hunters at the Eastern State Penitentiary, and you probably know all about that one.
Yep.
And I watched that video, and you can see this black thing down the aisle there. It moves across. So how do you explain this? And I start getting, my hair starts standing up on edge when I think about some of this stuff. But a long time ago in Hammond, Indiana, there was a place called the Crystal Hotel. Did I mention that last
time? Yeah, that was a great story.
And that place gave you the creeps. You know, it was like creepy. And you could see things in there that you shouldn't see and shouldn't exist. I don't know how scientists would explain that.
That's so my question to you, because you brought up the concept of breathing in mold and spores and causing a hallucination.
Right.
So my question on that, and keep in mind, folks, when it comes to my level of belief with evidence, evidence is key, right? I'm not what they call an overzealous believer. I'm a believer, but I don't just jump into everything believing that everything happens as a ghost or paranormal existence. There's got to be some facts or evidence, whatever it might be. So my question for you, right? So from the skeptic side, I'd say, all right, Pat, so you're in this hotel. And by the way, folks, go back and listen to the last episode that's uploaded in podcast land. Now, wherever you listen to podcasts at Bob After Dark, you guys could go see part one of our veteran conversation here. Pat had a great story where him and a couple buddies decided to go do a little B&E. Good, a little breaking and entering.
Well, no, the doors are off.
So they didn't break, they just entered.
He just did the entering.
We just did the entering part. So we didn't break in.
He went to this older hotel and they all had an experience. So my question for you then is, if you guys are all breathing in the mold, right? Let's say there's mold, there's asbestos, whatever it might be.
It wouldn't explain what happened.
No, that's what I'm getting at. Is it possible that all of you can have a hallucination of the exact same thing happening at that exact time? Because all of you witnessed the same exact thing, right?
It is possible, but the problem is we witnessed that door slamming shut with a board stuck under it and a buddy of ours pulling on it that door wouldn't shut, and the door shook and then it came flying back. We could say maybe a big wind came in that window and did that.
Sure.
But no, I don't think so. Pound per square inch, it would have to be a lot of wind coming through there. And looking at the floorboards and the doors that were sitting, because there had been a fire in there and some of the doors were in the aisle moving back and forth like something's moving towards you, well, that gives you the right to jump out the back window.
Yes.
And that's what we did. We jumped out the back and we jumped on this garage and jumped down. And, you know, we were like 15, 16 years old. We got out of there, but we ended up going back, and a buddy of mine and this girl we know did a seance in there about 3 weeks later in the bottom, and a storm came up out of nowhere, lightning flash, looked like a devil's face. But again, you know, your mind can think of and create things that happen, but it was enough for us to get out of there. And I told him, don't mess with the Ouija board. I didn't get to sit down there and mess with it.
No,
right away, both those people died.
Oh, geez. Not at the same time.
No.
This took a turn.
I was going to say, it took a deep turn. By the way, folks, quick, at the half-hour mark there, our producer isn't even at the phones, so
no.
We should put him to work.
Making sure we're on the air. We are on the air.
We're
on
the air.
Thing.
Okay, so our phone lines are open, by the way, guys.
What's the phone number here?
Our phone number is 219-845-1100. If you got a call, you got a question, you want to call in and ask JR, you want to ask Pat, you want to ask me,
well,
you just want to tell me I'm full of it.
I got
to
say, Pat, Bob may have brought a Ouija board out one time. I left it to the other room.
We were doing a seance on Halloween a couple years ago.
Oh, smart.
He wanted no part. You should see my office. I have dozens of those things kicking around. Don't bother me none.
No, you had to pick Halloween, though.
Well, statistics show that around 45% of Americans believe in ghosts.
That's an interesting number. Now, do you know where you pulled that from? Because I'm interested to know at what capacity for the percentage. Is it certain group pulled them, or was it a cycle?
There were like four or five different polls, and they did an average, and it come out to about 45%.
So that's less than half. Now, I'm curious how many people I've never done a study of this, and it's funny that you bring that up because I don't think I've ever read a study of this.
Now, 18% of people will go so far as to say they have had contact with the ghost.
So 18 out of the 45%. So the other, what's the number then, guys? 18 minus 45.
That's going to be just under 80-something percent.
Yeah, so 80. So 20% of these people experience, but they still believe in ghosts. So I'm interested to know how many people might not believe in ghosts but still believe in an afterlife.
Well, I got a question.
Hit me. Don't actually hit me. I might start crying.
What does contact mean? Like physical contact, talking,
or
obviously,
getting tapped on the shoulder.
Getting tapped on the shoulder, because like I'm saying, like being talked to versus being touched, completely different.
Well, I think contact is where they actually
interact
somehow, like touching or something like that. But there is an interesting thing that has happened in the science community in the last couple years. And this may have something to do with what's going on when we talk about ghosts and spirits. For years, we've talked about parallel dimensions.
Yes.
Parallel universes. And scientists now realize that that can be pretty well to the truth, you know. We've got something on that, and I'll tell you what it is. The parallel universe theory, and it's been gaining traction. And for decades, experts also believed they had found the first solid evidence of the long-standing theory after finding a cold spot in deep universe. Now, when you talk about ghosts, you always talk about cold spot.
Yes.
Is it possible that the Earth is moving, as it's moving through space, is going through these phenomena in space, which is causing things to happen. I know it, you know, when I traveled through the Bermuda Triangle on a sailboat, there had been times when there was no wind, nothing, and the boat would just sit there, and you'd look in the sky and you'd see strange objects and stuff, you know?
Sure.
And it's possible that electromagnetic fields can play an important part in doing these things. And it's possible that, you know, the parallel universes, which now they're saying, can actually interact with us and things can pass through it. So if that's true, we got to be very careful what we do in science, because we could open up a gate that we don't want to open up.
Didn't BP already do that?
That was good. Dark Lord Cthulhu. Yes, I've seen that episode too.
And now in space, that cold spot was first discovered in 2015 and is about 1.8 billion light years wide area, where there are estimated 10,000 galaxies missing.
That's a lot missing.
Missing.
That is
galaxies
a lot.
Yes. Missing.
That's a lot of galaxies missing.
The mysterious area contains.
That. That's a lot missing, man.
It contains 20% less matter than it should, according to the Standard Model, which left scientists baffled. So, you know, every time we look into something, we have more things to look into. And, you know, when you talk about ghosts, spirits, UFOs, apparitions, things like that, there can be something going on that we haven't yet discovered, and it could have anything to do with parallel universes. You know, let's face it, we already measured the electro force that comes out of a body at the time of death. You probably read about
that. Sure, yeah.
And if that's true, then that's probably what they call our spirit. Where some scientists believe that, well, once you're dead, the electrical force in your body just becomes part of nature, gets scattered out over nature. But either way, it's not absolutely proven either way. However, if you look at religious entities, there's a lot to be said about that, that the belief in the human brain may be working in conjunction with other human brains across the entire planet, like in prayer and things like that. There could be something to all that, and I believe there is, because I'm a religious person. I believe, you know, in a lot of different things that happen, and I've seen miracles happen, you know, in combat, and I've seen things happen that shouldn't have happened, but it's something to think about. So when you encounter these strange things, these phenomena, you have to ask yourself the questions, you know. What is this? Like you in the haunted house, could it have been caused by mold? Could it have been caused by high frequencies? Because we can't hear those high frequencies. So a dog might stop and look at something, but he might be hearing a frequency coming from someplace else, mile away, 2 miles away.
Sure.
So we have to ask ourselves all these questions and come to some resolution of what can this actually be.
We have a phone call.
Take it live.
Take it live.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Bob, JR, Pat, good evening to you, gentlemen.
Oh, hey
good
there,
evening.
John. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
John's our weekly call-in listener, by the way. John, Panic, John, JR's having trouble hearing John on the mic.
He should be on number two there.
Two. Can you hear now?
Cranking up there.
Okay, good. Hi, John.
Hi, JR. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
Good, thank you. On your experience with that mansion, did you guys ever come to any conclusion on what you have experienced there, or any reasoning behind it, or any follow-up with anybody after the fact of what happened there?
So my girlfriend at the time, she was all the rage about it, because now we've made contact. Now she has evidence. Now she has a photo. And she is going on and on and on about everyone, anyone that would listen. Now, I don't think that we actually had conclusive a conclusion to it, because she would blow it up in different angles, and she would just, you know, try and clean up the picture, and she tried to get the best possible face. I chalked it up to I chalked it up to just, it was an experience that we all had, and I hope it never happens to me again.
Yeah, I mean, you stopped when you told that story. You know, I could almost feel the vibes you're feeling, and you know, when you said you were praying and stuff like that. So very interesting. And Pat, what is your theory on the Bermuda Triangle? Do you? I mean, I don't know. I haven't been following it. I don't know if things are just still disappearing.
Well, it's possible. You know, the current runs from the south to the north in the Atlantic, and currents create electricity, actually, as they move around the Earth. It's like a electrical heartbeat, like the vagal nerve system in your body. And I think that someplace, as we move through space, that the electromagnetic forces of the Earth mix with another force that causes an anomaly to occur. And this possibly can open up a hole to another dimension. I mean, we've talked about UFOs the last time I was on here, and we've talked about all these things. And people have said they've watched UFOs look like a hole opening up and them going right through it and disappearing.
Yeah.
They may have figured out, you know, people that are 1,000, 2,000 years more advanced than us, or even a couple hundred years more advanced than we are, a way to move through time and space using wormholes or whatever else is out there that they've developed that we have no knowledge of at this time. So the Bermuda Triangle is, you know, they talk about that, but the Bermuda Triangle isn't the only triangle on the planet.
No, we have one right here in Lake Michigan,
That's exactly right. And, of course, we have to be well aware that there are forces at work. We're like living on a giant generator. You know, as the Earth turns, and if you remember correctly, they were going to try something where they shoot a rocket in outer space and they hang this big cable down with this ball. And as the satellite moves around, it would generate electricity from this ball because of the Earth's rotation. And I don't know if they did that, but it's interesting to note that, you know, the Earth in itself is a giant electromagnetic field. You've got the Van Allen radiation belt, you got the North and South Poles. You ever look at the Aurora Borealis? Well, that's all those photons hitting, and you have. And, of course, in the old days, the Indians had legends about that and what it was, and in particular times of the year when the sun shoots solar flares, you have more of this radiation coming to the Earth, and in southern areas you can actually see this. Well, it could be that at certain times on this planet there is a gate that opens. Basically, you can call it a gate between what is called the alternative dimension, which scientists now believe might exist, an alternative dimension, an alternative universe that is being passed through and creates these anomalies where things just disappear. You never see them if they go in there. And if you read some of the accounts about some of these guys that flew through the Bermuda Triangle, one guy made it, a three-hour flight, made it in an hour to his destination when he hit this tunnel in the sky. And they've showed that on television and interviewed him. So there's a lot of interesting things that happen.
Well, you sure have a lot of knowledge about that, and I was not aware of the one in Michigan. And so, you know, as of today, is our government, per se, still investigating what happens there,
you've heard of particle charges. Well, our government, believe it or not, and a lot of governments across the world are developing ways to actually open up that hole. And I don't think that's a wise idea because you don't know what's going on. And they are using charged particle accelerators to do this.
Sure.
And whatever becomes of this new phenomena that they're trying to do, All we can do is wait and see. Maybe they've already done it.
John, as always, yeah. We appreciate you calling in.
Okay, very, very interesting, guys, and appreciate you coming on and sharing your stories. Thank you.
Of course, we'll see you next. We'll talk to you next week, John. As always.
Okay, Bob.
Thank you. We have another caller on the line.
We do. We have another.
You take
call.
It live. Caller, take who are live. You? Where are you calling from?
That's Dez from Detroit.
Hi, Dez from Detroit. How's it going?
Good, good. I just wanted to call and thank those fine gentlemen for their service. And I was wondering if you guys had heard stories or if you had your own stories about, like, gremlins?
Well, yes, in the military, and you know about those.
Yeah, we call them engine gremlins.
Engine gremlins?
Engine gremlins. But they're not real gremlins. We call them engine gremlins because if our planes don't run, they break, so we constantly have to keep them running. So if something went down, we would blame the engine gremlins. But the actual gremlins, can't say I've met one.
Pat, no, don't ask me.
Well, I've never seen a gremlin, except for some of the places I've been to. Some people look like gremlins to me, but
I'd be cave.
but that story originated, I believe, in World War II.
Yes.
And, you know, the pilots would say that, you know, some bolt would come loose or something, and they'd say a gremlin must have been on the wing. I don't think they've actually seen gremlins. What they did see is strange phenomena flying alongside them. That is documented in a lot of Navy and Air Force documentation from these flyers. But a lot of them were frowned upon, so word got around that if you see anything, don't talk, don't say anything about it, because they'll think you're crazy and you might lose your pilot's license, or they might not let you fly anymore.
I hope that answered your question. Does he got anything else for us?
Yeah, so actually, I kind of sent you a whole story that I had heard a while ago, and it was like a legit military story about gremlins and a plane. And the other thing is that Charles Lindbergh, you know, he like wrote a book about flying across the Atlantic.
Yes.
Around the world. He actually, in his book, he actually wrote a whole part about he saw gremlins and they were like in his control panel. And yeah, it's like it's in his book that he actually published, and everybody was like, that's kind of a weird thing for him to add in there.
Let me read you guys this encounter Dez sent in real fast, since we got Dez on the phone here. Years prior, in the summer of 1939, an earlier encounter was reported, this time in the Pacific. According to the account, a transport plane took off from the air base in San Diego in the middle of the afternoon and headed toward Hawaii. Back to Hawaii, always with Hawaii. There,
always with Hawaii, baby.
On board were 13 Marines, some of whom were the crew of plane and others were passengers. It was a transport, after all. About halfway through the flight, while still over the vast expanse over the blue Pacific, the transport issued a distress signal. After that, the signal stopped, as did all the forms of communication. It was as if the plane had simply gone silent and then vanished, which made it all the more surprising when it reappeared later outside the San Diego airfield and prepared for the landing. But the landing didn't seem right. The plane came in too fast. It bounced down the runway in a rough, haphazard ways, and then finally came to a dramatic emergency stop. Crew on the runway immediately understood why, too. The exterior of the aircraft was extensively damaged. Some said it looked like bombs had ripped it apart in the metal skin of the transport. It was a miracle, they said, that the thing even landed at all. When no one exited the plane to greet them, they opened it up themselves and stepped inside, only to be met with a scene of horror and chaos. Inside, they discovered 12 out of the 13 passengers of the crew. Each seemed to have died of the same ways, including wounds, large, vicious cuts, and injuries that almost seemed to originate from a wild animal. Added to that, the interior of the transport smelled horribly of sulfur and arsenic odor and of blood. To complicate matters, empty shell castings were found scattered about the interior of the cockpit. The pistols responsible, belonging to the pilot and the co-pilot, were found on the floor near their feet, completely spent. 12 men were found, but there was a 13th. A co-pilot had managed to stay conscious despite his extensive injuries, just long enough to land the transport at the base. He was alive but unresponsive when they found him and quickly removed him for emergency medical care. Sadly, the man died short while later, and he never had a chance to report on what happened. Thanks for sending that in, Dez.
Yeah, it was like the only real military story that I had. Oh, you know what? Actually, I have one more.
Sure, hit me.
So I've done a lot of volunteering over at Historic Fort Wayne in Detroit, and it was an active military base all the way up until Vietnam. I believe all the vehicles in World War II were sent through there because it was, you know, in Detroit. But I was cutting the grass one day, and I swear I saw a guy walk out of the tunnels, like an old, like kind of Civil War looking, you know, I thought it was one of the reenactors, and it looked like he looked at me and then like did an about face and ran back into the tunnel. So I texted some of the people that, you know, like they do reenactments and stuff there, and they were like, no, we're not doing anything today. So like, I have no idea what you saw or who that was. And that just kind of freaked me out.
You know, we talked about this because Pat, you had asked me last time we were on about soldiers still being on watch.
Yeah.
So that sounds what that would be like, the soldier in uniform walking out. And you said he did an about face, and he probably did it smartly, meaning he looked sharp still. And
yeah.
And then ran.
Yep.
So
similar circumstances then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in, Des. We really appreciate listening all the way from Detroit.
Let me make a comment.
Have a great night, guys.
Oh, Pat, you got it. Yep.
Yeah, on what he just said. You know, you think about that. Could it be, and as we know, when we stand outside and look at some of those stars don't exist.
No, they're long gone,
don't.
Yeah.
But yet we're seeing the light from them. And because it takes so long for the light, could it be that some anomaly occurs, like I mentioned earlier, that creates, and you heard of Krillian photography. Krillian photography, a Krillian photographer can take a picture of your aura, of your body. It's like a fingerprint. And that's what they're using now in satellites. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but they can detect a human being on a planet if they're looking to kill them. And design a bullet that can actually go around corners and that and hit this guy.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for telling me that, Pat. I appreciate you keeping me up at night with that.
But it's called Krillian photography. It takes a picture of the aura of your body. So we have auras. You know, we're made out of electromagnetic, bioelectric energy. So basically, when we see a ghost or something like that, it could be that it's like a film where you are watching the film.
Yeah.
It's not really occurring now, but it occurred, you know, years and years and years ago. And somehow the electromagnetic field that captures this energy is reproducing it.
Well, that's a good, interesting theory. Des, we still got you on the phone?
No, we lost.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, last time, Pat, and I know a couple of people were asking about this too, you kind of left them on a cliffhanger about you were not with us on Present on Earth for a little bit there, right? Did you pass away and come back?
Near-death experience.
Like a near-death experience?
Yeah, I was like clinically dead for 8 minutes. And luckily I fell dead in the hospital. Otherwise I would have been dead or a doornail. But, you know, it wasn't like passing out. And I passed out before, a week before that. It was much different. I remember thinking, oh, no, this is it. And then I went into, like, this area, and it was real dark. And then I went into another area that was darker. And then these things, they look like out of Star Trek where you beam you up and stuff, you know, and, like electrical things around me. And it was almost like I was at a subway station waiting for something, but I knew I wasn't, you know. And I woke up, I'm looking up at the doctor, and the doctor's looking down, and he says, we were getting ready to call you. And I said, well, I don't have my phone on me. I mean, mean, I at the time, he was asking me questions, who I am, you know, do you know where you're at and all this. And, at first, I couldn't answer the questions, but after that, I realized after the blood started circulating through the brain again and everything, and I told the doctor about it, and he says, well, that was probably from the electrical shocks we were giving you. And at the time, my wife is out in the hall freaking out, and there were 12 people in that room. There was all kind of doctors, nurses, and a chaplain. And when I woke up and came out of it, I knew something was seriously wrong there because the chaplain was in the room.
A story very similar to my my mom's. I don't think she'll mind me saying this. My mom was pronounced dead twice. In her first NDE, she sat up in bed, and she's like, man, they just leave the door open in this hospital, you know, in the operating room. And she's like, man, why? Oh, God, wait a second. I'm not here. And long story short, my mom, you know, she came to, and they were like, Marie, you know, you're dead. She's like, oh, I'm not now.
I will say this. When I was clinically dead, it's like nothing here mattered. Nothing mattered here at all. It was like, hey, relax, forget about all this. You didn't remember nothing about anything because your brain's not working anymore. There's no oxygen going to it. So
basically, you like
rest in peace.
So it was like you were waiting in the subway station, basically.
Yeah, kind of like that, you know. And
interesting.
These things that were around me, the doctor couldn't explain that. You know, he said, well, we were giving you electrical shocks. Maybe that's what it was. I said, Doc, you ever been dead before? He said, no. I said, how do you know? He said, well, you got a point there.
That's true.
I'm sorry. That was good. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
What
does the doctor know? Yeah.
That's
doctors have that. How do you know?
My mom's story is very similar. She's like, hey, I woke up, and she's like, I sat there and I looked at the door, and she's like, who leaves a door to an operating room open? She's like, oh, that's for me to go through. And then she came to, and she's like, she always tells the best part of the story. She said, you know, when they anoint you for death, she's like, that oil tastes the absolute worst because, you know, they're anointing you with oil.
Yeah.
She's like, it tasted so bad it dripped out.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, that's thanks for sharing the NDE stuff. It freaks me out. I had one, but I didn't have one. I was very conscious when I hit a moving train. I'm not joking. I hit a moving train. I just very got lucky and hit the wheel and bounced back, but that's it. So thanks for sharing that. I know, super personal story. I know not a ton of people are comfortable sharing their near-death experience, but here's Pat just being like, oh, yeah, here. You ever sit down and think about writing a biography, sir, or paying somebody to do write the biography, or you do an autobiography?
Yes.
I'd read the heck out of it, just to be completely frank with you.
I'd do the audiobook for you.
Excuse me?
You know, get out of here. I've been to a lot of places, did a lot of things, ended up in places I didn't want to end up, and been in a lot of beautiful places. And Peru was one of the more fascinating areas that my wife and I went to. And there are a lot of strange things that happen in Peru, believe me. There is under a church there where they have all these heads that look like skeletons. And the rest of the area is bricked off. Well, blocks. They use big, thick blocks. And the rumor has that the devil was on the other side of those blocks. And when the first Spaniards got there, they sent soldiers in there, and the thing killed them, a whole bunch of them. So they decided to block it off. And there's more to that story, you know, how legends start. Some of them are true and some of them aren't. But we do know that there's areas where they have big runways and areas where you can't see anything unless you're way up on a balloon or something flying over a plane of Nazca's down there. And a lot of strange things happen in Peru.
Sure. I got a question from, I believe it's Sylvia in the chat. She asks about the power of prayer. Keep in mind, folks, a lot of my audience that does listen are of the witchy persuasion, so prayer to them would be more spell work.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just say, as a whole, prayer, spell work. Do you guys believe in the concept of, we'll just say, dedicated thought to something improving or changing.
Absolutely.
Yep. Oh, sure. Thought alone, thought or wish alone.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think, you know, we try to figure things out on this planet, but there's so much that we haven't figured out. And it's just mind-boggling to us. We think we're so smart, but we're not. You know,
Kyle Panic, what's going on?
I'm just saying they gotta film the news here in a second, so we got about like 5 minutes left there, so before we get the boot.
Okay, thanks guys.
Well, you know, they gotta have it done by the morning.
I appreciate that. Yeah. All right, so wrapping up here, I suppose. Pat, before we do anything, have you made it public yet about your news on Friday?
Yes.
Okay, so we could say it here. Folks, this is a very special episode of Bob After Dark, and we're glad we got Pat on here. Pat's about to take a well-deserved and well-respected retirement from the world of broadcasting and in general. Pat, even post-military, has been working nonstop to make sure the world's a better place. For both veterans and the people alike and the people on the airwaves. So on behalf of me, Bob After Dark, and the entire Bob After Dark fan base and WJOB, yeah, we just want to say thank you for all of your years of service you've brought to.
And, you know, I like to say that if it wasn't for our American Legion and our American Legion Post 168 and the people involved in spearheading this continual program that we have that's got national attention and national recognition, wouldn't have been able to do it. You know, it takes a whole team to do this. So hopefully the show will continue for another 15 years with younger people and that, and continue on to bring news to the veterans and spearhead the projects that we need. There's a lot of work yet to be done for the veterans. There's legislation that needs to be passed. Always a fight.
Sure.
It never ends because they'll take stuff away from us, you know, if you let them. So you got to stay fighting. And I'm stepping down. I fought for 15 years. And I think that's it's time for younger guys like you.
Man. A new host.
A new host.
Announced today. Yes.
And I have them go ahead and fight for the veteran.
But happy retirement to you, Pat. You deserve it. JR, you're stuck. You ain't retiring from nothing. People want to see you back on the show at some point.
I'd love to come back. Absolutely.
Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of myself and the entire Bob After Dark crew, we just want to wish you guys sweet dreams and good night. And to my mom, I just want to wish you a good night. And to my dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy and comfortable. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.